Have you ever had someone say to you, that person just knows how to push your buttons? And you know that feeling when someone says that, that it's either a family member or it is like a coworker you don't really know very well, and they just have that way of pushing every button about you. And so a few years ago, my brother is one of those people. And my brother doesn't just push buttons though. My brother knows how to put a fork in the heart of everything that matters to me. My brother's only 18 months younger than me, so we kind of grew up with all the same friends, all the same high school. So you can see there's gonna be a lot of brotherly tension going on between us. And so a few years ago, we're sitting in my mom's living room, and my brother was like, it was like double-fisted fork day for my brother, and he was bringing in everything to just stab at me, politics, religion, everything you can imagine, all the like no-nos in family conversations, and he was just having quite a day with me. And I noticed that usually it could be fun, but it made this decided turn. It got really personal. And I noticed that like I was like, I'm good. And like a kettle that's boiling, it just started to like build in me. And I'm like, no, I'm okay, right? And the simmer kept coming and it kept coming. And then like the final like jab with the fork, and it was like, I am boiling now, right? I was so boiling inside, and I was a boiling kettle. I was Hulk without the muscles and without that green pigmentation, without that animation. And so I remember just marching across the living room, putting my hand on his shoulder, and like the finger came out, you know? And I was like waving in his front, and I was quoting statistics and quotes and moving stories, telling him how wrong he was. And of course, then in the midst of this like just this like vomiting of like all these things of telling him what a terrible person he was being in this moment, I looked at his face, and his face had this sense of like shock and horror. Because I don't do this often, I don't reach the boiling point, and then all of a sudden like his shock and horror in his face sort of made me go like, oh my goodness. What just happened? Like the shock and horror came over me. And then it was like that tremendous awkward family silence of like, wow, this just happened. And we have no words to describe it. And we were both so amped up in that moment with our family all around us that it was kind of like, we just dropped the conversation and no apologies could possibly happen in the midst of that moment. And the air in the room filled with like this deep sense of sadness. And I remember later that afternoon, Stacy, my wife, kind of like rubbed my shoulders and kind of did the like, don't you think you owe your brother an apology? And I did the like, no, I was justified, right? No. And did you see, Stacy, the forks that he was flying at me? And then I remember I went in the kitchen later that afternoon, and my mom's like putting things away, and she did like the nice mom tone. And she was like, don't you think that it'd be nice if you told your brother you're sorry? Now, I want to tell you today, when mom and your wife gang up on you, it's over. It's a double duo team, right? And so that mental picture of that family dynamic, that pushing of my buttons, just sort of sat uncomfortably in my heart. The Bible tells a story in Luke 15 of a son who comes to his father and says, I want my share of the property. Now, this would have been scandalous for an agricultural community, because what it meant was that the very land that they have to grow the vegetables and the fruits to make a family living had to be cut in half, or at least in thirds. And so the son says, give me my share of the property, which was a sense to say, I don't respect you as my dad. And so the dad, feeling pushed, divides the family property, gives him his inheritance. And the son, of course, goes and spends all this money. And then there's a famine that comes over the land, and the son is literally bankrupt. He finds a job tending to the pigs in this foreign country. And as he is feeding these pigs this slop, he finally kind of wakes up to, he feels this deep sorrow within his heart. And he says, I'd be better as a servant in my dad's house. So he makes the long travel back to his dad. And And he says, before he can actually even say these words, but this is what he says, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son." And before he can even get these words out of his mouth, you know this beautiful story. The father runs. A Jewish patriarch, this doesn't happen, runs out on the end of his property, hugs his son and puts the best robe on him and a ring on him, and he feeds him. And there's this incredible celebration in this home because this son decided to say the words, "Dad, I'm sorry." Now, there's a whole lot of consequences that come with all of our actions when we hurt someone, but this moment, this "I'm sorry" begins a process of healing. It begins, this little family can begin to start to reconcile with all the pain and all the heartache that happened. It doesn't make everything go away, but the healing begins. There's a story of a prophet named Jonah, and Jonah is called to go to the Ninevites, who apparently were very nasty people. And Jonah tells these people, "Hey, you got 40 days or bad stuff is gonna rain down from heaven," right? A great biblical story. And so, but the turn of the story happens when Jonah says this to the Ninevites. They feel this deep sorrow in their heart, and they begin this process of, "I'm sorry." They begin this whole process, but they say it this way, because the Bible doesn't use normal words, "But let people and animals be covered with sackcloth. Let everyone call urgently on God. Let them give up their evil ways and their violence." In English, we say, "This, God, we are sorry." And Americans like to get right to the point. It's a quick tweet. It's a quick Facebook post. It's simple, right? And in this story, it's just quite beautiful because the Ninevites are like, "Oh yeah, that's right, we are sorry." And in this tribe, in this nation, the healing begins to happen as this nation realizes all the wrongs they had been doing to one another. And then there's a story of King David. And King David has an incredible story, but there's this moment, this low, terrible moment in his life where he commits adultery with Bathsheba. He's supposed to actually be leading his troops. He commits adultery, and then he gets the text message, right? "I'm pregnant," from Bathsheba. And then after that, he's reeling now. What do I do to fix this? This is not my wife. This is bad. So Uriah, the husband of Bathsheba, he brings him home in a setup, right? "Oh, now I'll solve everything. No one will have to know." But Uriah is an honorable man. And so he follows the Israelite laws and rules and does not do what we do when we make babies with each other. And so he goes back to the war, and David says, "Send him to the front lines." Oh, this downward spiral you're seeing. So Uriah goes to the front lines, and what you do in ancient warfare, Uriah dies. And so it's this bleak moment. It's a Quentin Tarantino film, right? Without all the blood and guts of like lies and greed and an affair and a battle and a warfare, and there's no hope. There's this awful sitting. And remember that King David, he's the one through that the Messiah is supposed to come, that the healing of the entire world is supposed to come through. And so the prophet Nathan walks in to have a little conversation with King David. And this is like not one of those comfortable conversations, like the CEO with the lower employee. And Nathan says, "You're the man. You're the man who's done all this harm and done all this shame. You have wounded not only Bathsheba and Uriah, but the whole nation of Israel." And it's like, it woke David, it shook him, and this deep sorrow filled his heart. And that incredible poem prayer that Whitney read for us today, just some snippets from it, David begins to pour himself out and say, "Have mercy on me, O God, for I know my transgressions and my sin is ever before me. Purge me with hyssop and I shall be whiter than snow. Create in me a clean heart." And we would say, "God, I am really, really sorry." And so, what do we mean when we say these words, "I'm sorry," and Some of these are extreme examples, and all of us, though, have a sense of wronging and wounding another person. And when we say we're sorry, we're basically saying this: I have this deep sorrow or regret within me over my actions. When we say we're sorry, we basically say we mean that our regret has moved us to a new resolve to change. That there's something that is woken in us to say, I don't want to act in that way. I'm going to choose to act in a new way with you. When you say, I'm sorry, you say, I regret my actions and I want to move forward in better ways. Just to like really make clear the difference between an apology and forgiveness, I thought it was helpful to say, saying I forgive you is the response to someone who has hurt you after a process of grief. Whitney helped us to see this so well. But saying I'm sorry is the recognition that your actions have hurt others and this resolve to change those actions in the future. And so this is how the Bible talks about it. The Bible often doesn't just say the I'm sorry. The Bible has a lot of ways of talking about this sorrow, this regret. I love this poem in Psalm 38. It says, I confess my iniquity, I am sorry for my sins. And then remember that beautiful scene when Jesus is on the cross and there's two thieves that are hung with Jesus in the Gospel of Luke story. And one of the thieves is just poking fun at Jesus, right? And the other thief says this, remember me when you come into your kingdom. This sense of sorrow of like, you are not like me. I was guilty for what I did. You're the one who didn't do anything. And then there's that little story of a tax collector and a Pharisee come into the temple. And the tax collector says, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. And of course, the religious leader says, God, I thank you that I am not like other men. And Jesus opens up this great window for us on what it means to be deeply sorrowful. To be sorrowful is to have this deep sense of sorrow and regret and this new resolve to move forward in new and fresh ways. To say I'm sorry does something incredibly huge in our world. Saying I'm sorry begins the process of healing for our world. Because all of us are interconnected in such deep and penetrating ways. When we say I'm sorry, we put a drop into the ocean of all this wounds, of all this pain, of all this brokenness, and these little drops begin to spread into the world. Saying I'm sorry, it's like the world is this huge sour grapefruit, and saying I'm sorry is like putting some sugar on it, right? It begins this healing, this wholeness, this restoration, this incredible thing. So it's not just a one-to-one thing. When you say I'm sorry, you inject into the universe the possibility of healing and forgiveness and love. So I thought about it in several ways, what this process activates in the world. When you say you're sorry, you own your part in hurting another human being. This is complex. There's a lot, when you say I'm sorry, every one of us as adults can know other people were guilty too. There's other wrongs, it's complexity. But when you say you're sorry, you own your part. And that is huge. When you say you're sorry, you cut the fuse before it explodes. You deactivate a spiral of more and more pain in the world. When you say you're sorry, you stop the cycle of shame and guilt. You're saying I'm sorry, you stop that shame and guilt in yourself and in someone else. When you say you're sorry, you honor someone's sacred worth. That every human being you've ever known has this sacred divine image they're made in. And you are able to say to them, when you say I'm sorry, you honor that. When you say you're sorry, you deepen and strengthen the relationship. Some of the strongest relationships I have are people that we have learned over time to trust one another. That being human sometimes means we bump into one another. That's what we talk about at St. Andrew Wildflower, where it means we're from the dirt. This human journey means sometimes we say things and do things that we didn't mean, that we didn't expect. But if you notice, those people you learn to quickly say I'm sorry with, there's a depth to the relationship. There's a trust that can be re-engaged on a deeper level. When you say I'm sorry, you take off the mask and allow other people to be honest and vulnerable about what it means to be human. There are going to be bumps and scrapes and sometimes breaks as we journey with one another. But saying I'm sorry can begin the beautiful healing process with one another. What amazes me is There are days when at my house, there are meltdowns, and there is screaming, and there is crying, and there is and there's this words and screaming, and I walk into this, and I'm like, oh, chaos just broke out in my family with my young kids, and I have no idea how to handle it. And a couple things that have helped me is after the meltdown, after the, like, what I'll call it is basically like awful sibling behavior happens at my house. And sometimes it gets exploded onto mom and onto dad, and sometimes mom and dad exploded onto each other. Are you with me? It's this just terrible humanness that happens. And so often I'll ask Trey or Irie, I'll say after they've kind of had their meltdown, are you okay? Or I'll say, are you in control of your body? Or sometimes I'll just say, how are you? I'm actually not trying to be a psychotherapist to my kids. I'm actually trying to get them to kind of move from the angers and the fears in that like reptilian brain that we have to like the frontal lobe of like reflection and thought, and forget them to think about their actions and their behavior with one another. And so just sort of saying that, are you okay? Like helps to sort of let them breathe. And I don't really, there's no expected response. But Trey recently, as he's grown, he's sort of like picked up on dad's tricks. And so he asked me the other day in the heated meltdown, after his heated meltdown, he asked me like, dad, what does it mean to be okay? He says, dad, how do you know that you're good? Oh my goodness. And I'm like, this is the moment. This is the parental moment that you've like, this is the gem. I got to say the right word at the right time. And so I look at him, and I was prepared, and I said, you know you're doing good as a human being when you treat your mom, your dad, and your sister with kindness. 2 points for dad, right? And so this saying that we've come up with in our family, like, you know you're doing good when you're treating your mom, your dad, and your sister with kindness, is a way we're kind of making the shorthand of Jesus' teaching to us. When Jesus said, what's the greatest of all commandments? He says, love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And he said, love your neighbor as yourself. And by sticking these two together, Jesus has basically said, the barometer of your spirituality is always how you love another person with sacred worth. The sort of litmus test is always this connection to humanity. You see me in the eyes of every person that I've created. And so this goes right to this beautiful thought of this Jewish theologian, Immanuel Levinas, who said, we find God in the face of the other. A beautiful, beautiful thought. And so when I was standing there, shaking my finger and holding the shoulder of my brother, and I saw his shock and his awe, I knew right away this sorrow, this guilt. Because my life has all been about this call to talk to people, right? I have this calling to put things into words in ways that inspire human hearts. And I had taken that calling, that gift from God, and I had used it on someone that I deeply loved. And I'd hurt them. I had put this incision in my brother's heart from this gift that was meant for good was used for evil, for awful. And so I had to deal with that sorrow and that regret. Because all of us find God in the face of one another. And so this morning I want to ask you, is there anything that you have said or done in the last month, week, or past few days that you feel sorrow or regret over? Think about the most important relationships in your life, your spouse, your kids, your roommate, your friends, your mom or dad, your brothers or sisters, your coworker or business partner, maybe even a neighbor. Have you wronged anyone? And it's really a process that takes time. But then are you able to say with the psalmist, I confess my iniquity, I am sorry for my sins? And then lastly, is there someone that you need to say the words, I'm sorry? And I just ask you to hold them in your mind now. And I ask that maybe later today, maybe it's a phone call, maybe it's stopping by their house, maybe it's a note, maybe it's a letter you've meaning to write for a long time that says it so simply, I'm sorry. So a couple weeks later, I called my brother on the phone, And I said to him, hey, can I just drop, I'm in the neighborhood, can I drop by? Which was absolutely lame because I live like 45 minutes away. And so I drove over and he's sitting on his front porch of his house and we spent like an hour talking about like, you know, what's on sports radio and the latest like scandals in the news. And it was like, come on, Dale. And like everything within me, like I was just a wimp. And it just like, it came out really quiet, like, hey bro, I'm sorry. And it just like, you could just feel like everything on that front porch changed. And my brother was like, me too. And it was this quiet, solemn moment. Men in the Fredrickson family don't talk very much about things of meaning. So that was very meaningful. And it was like this moment of like, okay, we can move forward. There can be healing. And even though there'll be consequences, there's this beginning to healing of our relationships. Amen.